Do not confuse this with treatment or mental health advice or direction. Nothing on this podcast is made to supplement or supersede the relationship and direction of your mental health caretakers. Although David Koslowski is a licensed marriage and family therapist, he is not functioning as a certified mental health professional in this environment. And same applies to any professional who may appear on the Light the Fight podcast. Welcome to the OG Therapy.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of OG Therapy. As always, I'm your host, David. And as you guys have been figuring out, I've been doing some guests lately. Last week, we had Kenneth Scott, a good friend of mine and a former University of Utah wide receiver. And today, we got another special guest, another OG in his own right, Mr. Robert Johnson. Rojo.
Yo, what's good,
man? Great to see you, man. I'm glad you're able to come over and just hang out with me for a little bit and share some of your knowledge and wisdom in life. Because in this podcast, when I interview people, I strictly only am interviewing people who are actually OGs. People who've been there, done that, and lived to tell the tale. And you, in my opinion, from all the work that you've done with youth in recent years, from your extensive athletic career, playing in the NFL, playing in college, and just being a great dad, have always been an OG, in my opinion. And so when I talked to you and you said you want to come on the podcast, I was super pumped. I was excited because I got a good feeling that you're going to share some knowledge and some wisdom with us. But as we talked about before the podcast, knowledge and wisdom, at least the best ones, don't always come through the easiest times in life. They come through difficult times in life. So thanks for being on the episode. I really appreciate it, man.
Well, no, I appreciate y'all for putting me on. And on top of that, I mean, make me feel old when you say OG, because I remember thinking about OG. You know, it's a blessing to be called that, and also having people that care about me enough to allow me to be on here and kind of tell my story, which is definitely something that's big for me. So I appreciate it.
Well, yeah. And so let's start with that. Just give us a little, to all of our listeners, give a little heads up, because the guest thing is new for me. I've been doing the Light the Fight podcast for over 5 years now. My former host, co-host with me, Heidi Swap, she and I did it for a long time. And in recent months, we've been doing different things. And so for me, having guests on the podcast is exciting for me, but it is definitely new. And since I haven't had guests on the podcast in the past, a lot of people, and I'm not active on social media personally, so people don't know who my friends are, who the people I mess with, my circle of people. And so I wanted to highlight you as one of those people, but I also want people to have a little bit of background information on you, where you're from, how you got to Utah, how you got this place that we even actually met. And then after that, we can get into sharing some knowledge and wisdom with our listeners out there about how they can get through difficult times in their life, but also just being an example, not just talking about it, but actually being about it.
That's good. Where do I start?
Yeah, so first of all, why don't you tell everybody where you're from? I know the hat does a little bit.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I have to hold it down, you know, because that's our stuff. You know, yeah. OGs, got to be original from L.A., and that's where I'm from. So, you know, going back into that, born and raised in Los Angeles, California. Bounced around from South Central to Watts my whole life. Big family. It's seven of us, five boys, two girls.
Where are you at in that?
I fall right in the middle. Flat in the middle. I got three older brothers, a younger brother, and two younger sisters. So I'm right in the middle. And like I said, born and raised in the inner city. And the common theme, or people that think that's like normal, it kind of grew up on it. Like, my father was killed when I was young. My mom took care of all of us. And single parent homes is very, very common. You know,
single parent with seven kids, though.
Yeah, yeah. And that's why she's a super mom. Like, she's a super mom, because my dad, the stories that I've heard, like, my dad was the breadwinner, which is the way it was back in the day. You stay home, take care of the kids. I'm going to make sure to take care of everybody. You just be, you know, be that rock, that soul, you know, that's there. And when the passing happened, it kind of changed up. And my mom had to show us that she could do roofing, she could do construction, she could whoop our ass too. You know, it was just kind of one of those things.
She had hands for everything.
Yeah, exactly. Like, she was a disciplinary one, and she was the one that was the loving one. And when you grew up in the inner city, like, we always talk about, it takes a village.
Yeah.
And we leaned on the village a lot of the inner city streets. We leaned on them a whole lot, you know. But growing up in that, and then three different middle schools, three different high schools, and then went to the nearest junior college, walked to the nearest junior college. Last game of the year, my second year, Coach Sataki, he's over, you know, down south, but I love Coach Sataki, man.
Quick, just so everybody knows, Kalani Sataki is who you're referring to.
Yes.
Because some of our listeners aren't big football fans.
Oh, yeah.
And that's why it's a good introduction for you. So, yeah. Kalani, so tell them a little about Kalani Sataki.
Yep, Kalani Sitake. I mean, he's currently the head coach at Brigham Young University, BYU. But going back into that, yeah, Coach Sitake, he came down, picked up somebody from another team. He was looking at another person from Citrus College. He was looking
so he wasn't there to see you, to recruit you.
Oh, heck no.
So, because the way recruiting works in college is college will send out coaches. They go and view some talent. And every now and then, they see someone on the field like, hey, that kid can play. Like, what's that kid's name? So is that kind of what happened with you?
Honestly, that's exactly what happened. That is exactly what happened about, like, you know, you hear that term of, like, doing the right things and right things kind of happen. It's like you kind of put yourself in opportunity's way. That's what I always told myself. And it just was a crazy situation. It was just so crazy that coach come down, Coach Kalani Sitake, he comes down. And at this time, he was currently our linebacker coach at the University of Utah at that time.
Yeah.
And he came down to watch somebody from Citrus College, which is another junior college that's very popular.
Oh, it wasn't even anyone on your team.
No, it was the other team. It was the other team. And we didn't have a good season, but we was playing against a team that was very popular when it comes to Division I scholarships. They had a quarterback that committed.
They produced a lot of good athletes.
Yes, yeah. Yes. And they had a quarterback that was committed to Florida at that time. And they had a linebacker that was a monster. That was a bounce back from Alabama, and he was a monster. He was a monster kid. And they had a couple of people that was, you know, I can't remember some of the names, but they had some people.
Yeah,
they had some people. And Coach Sitake comes down to watch Josh Broden from, and he was a cornerback for Citrus College. And I just remember I was having a normal game. And this is my second year. This is my second year at my university, but first year playing football.
Okay.
Because my older brother wanted to play with me. And we was like, let's do it. Let's make it work. The coach comes down. And after the game, he just like, I know you got a lot of people talking to you. I'm like, no, nobody's talking to me. He said, really? Like, do you have film? No, I don't have no film. Like, can I get this game film?
Did you have cleats?
Pretty much, right?
I'm like, because I could totally see you, because knowing your personality, you're just like, I'm just playing football, having fun. Like, you weren't like, okay, I got to post on this social media to try to get attention. You weren't trying to get recruited. You were just trying to play football.
100% correct. Okay. It's like going back to what I was mentioning about how high school, I went to three different high schools. I had that moment in life where I almost didn't graduate. And like, my mom said the magic words of like, you know, I'm very disappointed in you. And I'm like, oh, you know, that hits you deeper. It stings way deeper to hear your mom say that, where it's like, I'm one of the brothers that almost didn't graduate. It's like, I got to do something. So then I walked to the nearest junior college, which was Los Angeles Southwest Community College.
Yeah.
I walked to that one. And then my first year, I ran track just to stay in shape. But the goal was to get my AA degree or my Associates of Arts degree under 2 years. I was like, I'm going to figure out a way to do that for my mom. You know, so like I said, the first year I didn't play. I just ran track. Second year, my brother said, I'm about to play. You should come play. Cool, let's play. And then this is like the season is going not the way we want it to go, but I'm having fun. Yeah. I'm having fun playing with my brother, Elijah Johnson, playing with him, playing with EJ. That's what we call him. Playing with EJ, and he played receiver, and I played athlete. I was kind of like corner, safety, linebacker, receiver, tight end. I kind of played it all, and it was just like having fun, really having fun. And the last game of the season, knowing that our season was about to be over, Coach Sitake approaches me with this crazy idea of, do you have film? And it's like, no, I don't have film, man. Like, I don't know what you're talking about. And he's just like, okay, I'm going to get this film and take it back, and we're going to do some talking. I'm like, yeah, whatever. I grew up in inner city. The trust factor of believing what somebody is going to do, it never really happens.
You have people selling you with a lot of talk, but didn't really follow through.
It's
a lot.
Always like I love LA, love my hood, but it was one of those things of in LA is really one of those, I scratch your back, you scratch mine. So what I look like believing a Polynesian coach at that I don't even see Polynesians in my neighborhood like that, but he tells me that there's an opportunity that I can go to the state of Utah. Whatever. You know, he comes back 2 weeks later and he just like, yo, like the coaches like you, but I really like you. Would you come to Utah if we was to offer you a scholarship? Nonchalant. You know, I'm just like, yeah, whatever. You know, like, give me a scholarship. I'll come. Like, whatever. You know, I don't care.
And he said, by the way, just so you guys know, this is not the typical recruiting story.
No, heck no.
If you ever have a kid that got a D1 scholarship, this is never the story. This was like an accident that was like a beautiful accident.
It's just, it's happened. It just at the right place at the right time, and it just happened. And it's just like, coach, like, I'm gonna give you a plane ticket. You need to make sure to get there so you can come to Utah.
Did you even know where Utah was at?
No. And that's the craziest thing is that he asked me,
because it's not on the west coast, it's inland. See, but
he asked me, said, do you know about Utah? I said no. And he's just like, are you serious? I'm like, yeah, I don't. I said, even on the map, it's like, I grew up in the inner city. All I know is my hood. I don't know much about, like, Beverly Hills that's in Los Angeles. Like, I went to Beverly Hills twice my whole life, and I'm 35
It's a
now.
Small world.
Yeah, I only went twice. It's like, go and go see the beach. I've been to the beach maybe five times out of my whole life when everybody come to California, the beach, the beach, the beach. It's like, when you're in the inner city, the beach is really far, but as you get older, it wasn't that far. You just have to explore.
Yeah.
But it's hard to explore in LA when things is going on in the inner city.
Yeah.
But going back to, like, Coach asked me about that, and he's just like, I'll have a plane ticket for you. I'm like, yeah, okay, whatever you say. And I go to the airport, and me and my mom, we all laugh about it, because it's like, we go to the airport for the first time, and I'm like, okay, just leave the car running. I doubt that it's a free plane ticket that's there for me. You know, I highly doubt it. I go, and it really is a ticket. I'm like,
with my name on it.
Yeah,
had your name on it.
Yeah, I was like, it's really a ticket. I go back to my mom, like, well, I'm going to Utah. And she's just like, okay. I'm like, all right. Have you ever been on a plane? No. And it's like, wait, what? Mom, we never been on a plane. She's like, yeah, no, we never. But what you going to do? I'm like, I don't know. I'm just going to jump on this plane and see what happens. First time on a plane. First time leaving my neighborhood. First time seeing snow. I'm a 20-year-old getting on the plane coming to Utah, which was just like,
That was a leap of faith. Yeah, huge leap of faith.
It was. It turned more into, like, I have an opportunity to go do something different. And it feels like he believes me enough. He got a damn plane ticket for me. Like, he believes in me enough to kind of see that it's something about
Made
me.
Made you almost believe in yourself a little bit more.
Yeah, it changed. It changed a lot of my confidence, because at that time, I'm like, nobody know me. I'm just here. You know, like, I'm one of the inner city kids. And I'm just...
You're like, everybody in my neighborhood is fast.
Yeah, everybody. Like,
my brothers were all good athletes.
Yes, and it's like, I'm not top tier. Like, you know, I was in high school, and I've seen some top tier players that's like, you got USC coming down here. And, like, when you're in the inner city, man, D1 is like USC.
Yeah.
UCLA.
That's the dream.
That is the dream. That is D1. When you make it to one of those universities,
you're set.
You made it.
Yeah, you made
it. It's like, that's like the NFL for the inner city kids, is making it to one of those two universities, because it's like, now I can go do this and do that, because it's like, you got the respect in the hood. When you do that, you got, like, you the man. Yeah. And, like, Utah, I'm like, okay. Utah. All right. You know, like, whatever. And then I came and fully changed my life. It, first time seeing snow, but first time being around as many white people that I did, it was kind of shocking, but the acceptance of the state of Utah. You know,
you felt love when you first got here.
Yes. It was, you hear stories about Utah. When you come back from Utah, you hear all these different stories. And
people make assumptions about what they think it must be like there.
See and what they hear and things that they read. I come up here as a 20-year-old African-American kid that don't know anything but the inner city. And the state showed me love. Like, it was a different feeling when I came up here, because it didn't feel like I was the outcast. It felt more of, I'm accepted for who I am.
They wanted you.
Yes.
People wanted you around.
Yeah, and Coach Sataki was the biggest person that made sure to make me understand, like, it's not about the color. It's about what can you do with yourself. Like, present yourself in a certain matter. Present yourself in a certain way. Don't present yourself as a hood person, but present yourself as somebody that understands the hood, but then willing to learn what's outside of the hood, which it helped me a lot. And I came up here and life changing. Like I said, it's just all of a sudden it was like, okay, I come back home. I come up here for a recruiting trip, and I come back and confidence, like we were just talking about, the confidence of somebody wanting me made me feel so good. And then I get back to LA.
Especially if you look back at your younger self, now as a grown man, you look back, it's like a lot of young men, I don't know if you guys knew this, but a lot of young men walk around with this bravado, like, what's up, you know, it's all good. But underneath that, they don't have a lot of years on this planet yet. They're still trying to figure themselves out.
Yeah, and the best thing is that I had my brothers. That was somebody that I always looked up to, that was the closest to my father figure, was my brothers. And it was just one of those things of, my confidence was built through what my brothers was doing for me. As in, they, Rob, you doing good, Rob this, Rob that. But then at this time in my life, I didn't feel like a lot of people was noticing me. I just didn't. And
you felt like you almost had to break out of that norm.
Literally, that's what happened, is that I told myself when Coach Sataki came and talked to me, my brothers, I let them know, like, I'm going to go to Utah and I want to put my name in Utah. And my brothers, I'm just like, my oldest brother that I love to death, he told me a story. He told me a story after I made it to the NFL about how he was nervous for me when I came to Utah. He wasn't sure if that was a good move. He was like, I don't know.
And also, he couldn't protect you.
Yeah. My oldest brother couldn't. He was the closest father figure that we had out of the whole family. And he just like, you know, I didn't think Utah would have been good. He said, when you said you was going to Utah, I didn't want to tell you no, but I did want to tell you that you have to experience it. But I did have my...
He wouldn't have been surprised if you came back 2 months later saying, this place is cold.
Yeah.
This is not fun.
Yeah, see, my brother's like, I wanted to protect you and I had to allow you to go out and just experience it. So, man, it changed my whole life. When I came back, the confidence was there. And I'm like, I know that people are watching me. I know people are watching me. Then, you know, I came back home and I just remember telling my mom and my brothers, I'm going to go to the University of Utah. Like, I'm going to go up there and I'm going to go up there to get my degree. And that's the main focus. Call Coach Sataki on my chirp phone, because you know I didn't have a phone at that time. You know that
where you at? Those.
You know, so you know, like, the chirp, $20 chirp phone. Oh, man, keep the minutes on there. You know, like I remember using that to call Coach and was like, I'm going to come up here and you know, I just want to make sure that you can promise me I get my degree. Coach Sataki was like, I can promise you that.
Okay.
Like, football might not be forever, but I can promise you that when we commit to you, we're going to make sure you get your degree.
And that degree is really a barrier. It opens up a door.
It does. And my whole mindset was still trying to please my mom of the magic words that she told me in high school, which was, I'm disappointed. And she said that the goal was just to get the degrees. And it was like, get my AA degree. I got it right on time. Like, I graduated from Los Angeles Southwest Community College. I graduated on the 4th of June. I was already on my way to Utah June 11th because I had everything ready. Yeah. It's like, I'm kind of good. Like, I don't really have a lot of stuff. I got like a bag and I'm going to go up here and we're going to make this work, you know?
Yeah.
I come up here and loved it. And, you know, like that type of pathway that I went to get to a Division I university is a strange one. And it's not really a common one for somebody to be successful. Because that next year, my junior year, we went undefeated. Beat Alabama in the Sugar Bowl. Yep. Went undefeated that year. That was our 2008 to 2009. And that was one of the best years of my life. One of the toughest years of my life on top of that. Because currently, our defensive coordinator at the University of Utah, Morgan Scully, he was my position coach his first year as my position coach, the year we went undefeated. And me and Coach Scally, which is Morgan Scally, Coach Scally, we didn't see eye to eye at all. It was because, and we talk about it, we laugh about it, like now, because we're a little bit older, more mature. But that year was the toughest year for me, because he harped on weight. He harped on being at class on time. He harped on making good grades. He harped on me being kind of like a clown at practice sometimes, not taking practice too serious. I was really lighthearted, like, you know.
He wanted you to be more like that driven captain that's an example to everybody.
He wanted me to be him. And that was one of the hardest things in my life, was like, I'm not you. Like, Coach.
And also, let me guess, too, not having a father in your life, having some dude that, you know, you don't know at that particular time.
Yes.
Right? You come in, you're a young man, demanding you to not just be great on the football field, but demanding you to do all these other things.
Be an all-around man. And, like, for me, like you just said, that was...
you want to resist that.
Yeah, that was the biggest thing of, like, man, you can't tell me shit. Like, that's how I feel. Like, man, yeah. What are you telling me? Like, it's like, you didn't make it to the NFL. Like, you was good here, but you ain't did shit that was, like, important. And that's how I felt. Like, that, my junior year, me and Coach Scally was just bumping heads consistently, because the things that he wanted me to do, I did not see that they was important enough. It's like, as long as I'm showing up on this damn field, that's all that matters. It's like, what I did last year, it should bleed me over into my junior year, where I should naturally just, you know what I can provide to the team. You want to allow me to do the way I want to do it, and that's just it.
So what changed? Because obviously, when we talk about the end of your college career, you became that guy.
Yeah.
So what changed?
I mean, what fully changed was just like that undefeated season.
Because taking criticism is not easy to do.
No, it's really tough. And like I said, as being one of the toughest seasons, a couple of the players on the team, like, it was games I wasn't even playing. I wasn't playing, like, the first quarter or playing the second quarter. He would take quarters from me. He would take quarters from me or take a half from me. Like, we played against Oregon State, that really crazy Oregon State game that came down to the wire on during our undefeated season. I didn't play the first quarter. I didn't play the beginning. I didn't start that game, and I didn't start the beginning of the third quarter. I kind of, like, fell in. Like, I was – like, he was – Coach Scully was to me – I felt like he was picking on me, and he was teaching me a lesson. The changing point, the pivot point, was the week we was in New Orleans getting ready for our Sugar Bowl, and was getting ready to play against Alabama, like I was mentioning. During practice, I was running with the ones. I was running with the starters. I'm running with the starters, which is normal. Yeah. Like, running with the starters is just what I'm, you know, normal shit. And then he pulled me to the side and was like, okay. This period, because in football we have different periods, yeah. You know, like for some of the listeners, you know, in football we have periods of time of, like, we run certain stuff, as in running 7-on-7 this period, and then running, you know, a 7-on-4 this period, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And we're in New Orleans and we're practicing at a Tulane College, and I was running with the ones on one of the periods, and then the next period, you know, he's like, hey, take a step to the side. And I'm like, wait, what you mean? Like, take a step to the side and let Terrell Cole take reps with the ones. And it's just like, take reps. I'm like, no. And at that time, yeah, the hood switch kicked on quick of like, nah, hell no. Nah. Like, this ain't happening. So right after practice, I had a meeting with Coach Witt and everybody, and we talked it out. And my biggest thing, and I mean, I'm not going to say all that was said, but my biggest thing was just like, at the end of the day, I bust my ass this season. I refuse to not start this game. And it just went back and forth for a little bit, but then they made sure to let me understand. They made sure to let me know that they wasn't going to do that to me. Like, Coach Scally understood how big it was, but he wanted to make sure that I appreciate it. And Coach Sataki, make sure I appreciate it. Coach Witt, make sure I appreciate being able to have this, be on this platform.
The opportunity.
Yes, to do that.
And that was their way of teaching you a lesson where they didn't have time to teach you this over a year.
Yeah, they didn't. Like, not that whole season, but that was the pivot point.
And you were taking it personal. And
I was taking it so personal. Yeah. At that meeting that we had after practice, the love that I had for them, it poured out right at that moment of like, they're not doing this to intentionally get rid of me or hurt me. They're doing this because I need to learn. I need to understand.
And looking back at that young man that was going through, looking back at now, because now you are the OG, looking back at, and now you understand completely what they did.
Yes.
Right? Yep. And you can see the value in it.
I honor them and respect them for what they did for me for that season. That was something that I felt that I needed right at that moment. I needed that for that season. And it happened. And they didn't take me out of the game against Alabama. I wind up getting hurt towards the end, but I still had two interceptions, and I missed a third interception again, which was kind of common of like, I cannot get to that.
That wasn't a very close game for Alabama.
It was, but we had plans out, on them. Yeah. We had plans for them. And that changed my life. That changed my relationship with Coach Scally, with Coach Morgan Scally. That changed our relationship. And
I can say that it probably made you the coach that you are today. So, yes. You know, I've had the pleasure to work with my son for a couple of times. In fact, you work with him this winter. doing a conditioning and training for young kids. And I seen you coach young kids, and I could see how you kind of, even though it's not the same scenario, you kind of take that same approach where if it's your own son there, it doesn't matter how athletic the kid is there, you'll be like, no, you get in the back of the line, this kid gets to go, yes. Everyone gets their chance, and it's not being like, oh, everybody can be fair. It's like, just because you're really good doesn't mean that you're going to get some special extra treatment. You don't have to work as hard as everybody else.
100% correct, and that is...
I've seen you do that with the kids, and I've always... Thank you. I was like, I like that, because... I know if you're a really good athlete, it can get to your head.
Yes, it could. It could, 100%.
And you start believing what all your friends telling you, you're going to go to the league, you're this and that.
I was believing after my sophomore year that I'm the one that did this, so I should be starting at the University of Utah going into our undefeated season. Nobody should tell me shit. And that's the thing, is that I learned right there at that moment, at that practice, they cared about me outside of football. They cared about me as a person, and this will help you grow. Going into my senior year, me and Coach Scally had a meeting. And we had a meeting, and that was when I was already in the mode of like, I need to make this relationship work with him. Because he's busting his ass as a coach. He's doing what he needs to do as a coach. I need to do what I do as a player, as in just following what he needs. We had a meeting, and we had the half empty, half full type of concept of like, okay, Rojo, I'm going to allow you to be you, but you got to at least honor me as a coach and respect me as a coach. Man, me and Miko Scali wound up being best friends at that moment. My senior year, like you were talking about, it became a breeze because me and Coach Scali was able to be on the same exact page. And me and Coach Scali crack jokes about it now. Like, I think I was one of the players that helped him be even a better coach because he started to understand how to talk to somebody or how to relate to somebody
from a different culture, from a different place.
Yeah, and like just completely different. And me and Coach, like...
Because he was still pretty young.
Yeah, he was. He was. But then like when people was like... Like, this is going way off the topic, but when Coach Scali, when I found out about Coach Scali making racist remarks or whatever, it hurt me deeply because I'm like, bro, I had the biggest issue with this dude, but I am 120% sure he's not racist at all. So it was just like, what the hell are y'all talking about? Like, he is tough.
Yeah,
he is
different. For those people who don't know, they're listening to this. Oh, this was about, what, 2 years ago?
It was about 2 years ago, yeah.
Yeah, and during like the pandemic.
Some comments came out.
And we don't, you know, we don't need to get into all the details of it, but apparently some texts were going back and forth between some coaches, and I believe he copied and pasted something, right,
it's something that we don't know much about.
Yeah, one of the African-American coaches on the team, from what I heard, was saying, and he was like, yeah, he just kind of jiving back with them. Then it came out. Just that isolated piece. People were saying he's racist. And what you're saying is like, trust me, if he was racist, you would have known.
I don't know. And the way he treated me, oh, hell yeah.
He wouldn't have loved you. You guys would have never broke bread and been cool after that.
No, and it's just like when that came out, that really stung me as a grown man and as what I experienced with Coach Scali. And go back to that meeting that we had going into my senior year. He let me know the type of person that he sees in me and what he want me to do for him. As well as do for the team. And I did start making sure to maintain my weight more. I started to make sure that I go to class on time, make sure to sit in the front, make sure to be respectful, talking to my teammates, being around my teammates. If they're doing something that's shitty, at least letting them know, like, hey, I don't think that's right. And Coach Scali was the one that stood behind me and helped me see it's bigger than football.
Yeah.
And I love him for that. And I let kids know now that might have issues with them. And the way that he coached and the way that he kind of talks and the way that he goes about it, he's doing it because he sees something bigger than football. And him being best friends, like as later when I found out, him being best friends with Coach Satake, that showed me more of like, this is why I came to the University of Utah.
That's crazy, that story about Morgan Scali. And it was really interesting to hear you say that because I knew all that stuff that went down. And I didn't know that you had, I knew obviously he was your coach. I didn't know you had that kind of relationship with him where it was a little contentious at first, but then it grew into a really big, solid relationship. And as we talked about in the beginning of the podcast, a lot of people have different OGs in their life that play different roles at different times. Some people don't have any. And I feel bad for those people that don't have those wiser people. Because an OG really is someone that they've got at least done enough of things for you to admire them. They have to have enough experience. They have to have enough wisdom. And, you know, hearing that story, it made me think, wow, like having come from the background that you've come from, tough upbringing, 7 kids, single mom, no dad in your life, criticism, as I mentioned before, that was going to be difficult coming from any older male figure. Now, I don't mean to transfer my issues on you, but I had that issue because I didn't know who my biological dad was. And it was interesting. I always had this weird thing with male authority figures because except for a couple of OGs in my life, I didn't have males that really talked to me in a way that calmed me down and helped me see what I was doing wrong. It was more like military, like, you need to do this, like yelling at me, barking at me. And I don't think anyone likes that, but I know for myself, and it sounds like for you, it might have been harder to take, even if it was helpful criticism from an older male figure, when you're in that position of like, you're trying to protect yourself, right? Like you're trying to keep, you know, like, hey, I got to look out for myself because I don't know if I can trust these people. I don't know if this is really someone that has my best interest at heart. And so you finding out that he was close with Kalani, you guys having that conversation, that's a great example, in my opinion, on how diplomacy, communication, and everybody speaking about what's bothering them, especially men, not holding that resentment and speaking about difficult things and getting out there, giving another guy a chance to say his piece without arguing, fighting about it. That's a great story and a great example of how it can really build a lot of bridges, even with someone you thought didn't have your best interest. Now it comes to find out you said like he's someone really close to your life. So it made me think of the relationship or not having, better of saying it, not having a relationship with your dad growing up and now you being a father.
Well, I mean, it's a tougher
You get what I'm saying? As far as like the criticism goes, and like, is there anything that like you're looking back on your life going, gosh, what would my dad do? Or because since you don't know what he did or didn't do, you're trying to tap into some like DNA inside of you, like trying to speak like, gosh, how would he handle a situation? How would he handle this? How would he handle that? And how do you take that into your own parenting right now? Because when we're talking about criticism, you're going to have to give your kids criticism. You're going to have to make judgments. You're going to have to tell them some hard truths. But knowing you, your personality type isn't that steel fist, isn't like shove it down their throat. So how is you being a dad right now, not having your father, how has that affected you in wanting to be a better dad?
I mean, it affects me deeply, to be honest with you. It's like I have learned and heard it as I was growing up, is that it's not a perfect parent. You can never be a perfect parent. It's not a such thing as this is the parent that's for everybody. And this is the level, this is the bar that make you the best parent because you're doing it this way. Every kid is different. And like, I have two kids, I have two sons. I have my oldest, that's Aiden. He's 10 years old and he's almost at that stage where he feel like he can kind of pump out his chest. You know, one of those, but I'm starting to understand how to deal with that. And then I have a 3-year-old and his name is Adonis. And, you know, it's really tough. Like recently, and we're just talking about this a little bit recently, I'm starting to ask myself some of those crazy questions of like, what would my dad do? You know, like how would he handle this? And like the situation that I'm in right now, how would he go forward with it? And it's hard because those are questions that's not going to ever be answered. And the only way that I can get through it is by making sure that I'm helping my son help me. I'm helping my oldest because I feel like my oldest is like, you know, when you have your kids or if you do have kids, listeners, it's like, you know, your oldest is where you kind of like do a lot of the, we going to try this and it fail. It's like, okay, you know, our next kid that we have is going to be the one where we know not to do it this way. You know, so my oldest, it has been a little bit tough. Like when he do things that's not right, I try to get on him, but then I also try to keep in mind that he's the older brother. And he is somebody that I have to learn from. So it gets difficult because sometimes you do things that's just like, oh my God, like, come on, dude. Like, come on. Like, and I have to tell myself not to get too frustrated with it. But this is me trying to learn how to be a father when I didn't have a father figure around other than my mom. In the way that my mom kind of operated.
You didn't have a good or bad example.
No, yep. I had
just no example.
I had just like an even where it's just like, okay, this happens. This is what my mom would do. Okay, let me try it. But then the new generation of things, it makes things has changed completely. So now I'm getting to a point where I have to really take steps back and like try to listen to other people. Like you and me talked a couple nights ago and we talked about a situation where my son kind of did something that's really common, you know, that's
video game related, sneaking around.
Video game related. Yeah. It's the 10-year-old. It's not about a 10-year-old trying to make sure to like, I'm going to go against my dad or go against my mom. It's just
he's trying to see where the line is.
Pushing the limits.
Testing that boundary. See how far he can take
it. Pushing the limits. And I can take it to the level that we was just speaking about of like, I could be like, hey, I'm taking the game. That's it. Nothing else. I ain't got to explain to you, but
I'll give it back whenever I feel like it.
Yes. Yes. And like, I have to be able to take in some of that advice and take in the opinions and thoughts of others. We talked about it and you said something that was like, wow, you know, I have to take that step back and you're not my dad, but you're somebody that's an OG in my life. That's in my mind because the way that you painted the picture of how me and my son just had a little issue, it made sense. But that's the thing is growing up in the inner city, it's not too much that we can just like take from somebody when you grow up in a home where there's no father figure that was there.
You it's never like, had to argue about like too much video game time with your parent. These weren't problems and issues that came up.
Wasn't. And like being a man in general, it's like my mom did what she can to teach us how to be a man. But sometimes it's things, and my mom has explained it to me as I got older. Sometimes it's things that she can try to get me to understand, but it was so hard to really paint the good picture because she's not a man.
Do you ever find it difficult? And a lot of dads I talked to, and I know myself, I felt this way, that some things that your son will do, that there's this natural reaction to feel like it's disrespectful to you somehow.
Yes.
Or it's embarrassing, it's personal towards you. But when we talked about the other night, we step back, it's like, okay, he would be going through this regardless who his dad was. Mm-hmm. Like this, yeah. It's not personal towards you. This is a 10-year-old situation. This is a generational situation. And for us not to take it personal and to be so quick to react, obviously we don't want our sons to be, you know, just, you know, cupcakes and like let them get everything and enable them. Mm-hmm. But there's that fine line between being old school, which is like honest and direct with them, versus making things personal when we're disciplining them.
Yeah. And that's what I have to always tell myself is that it's not personal. And then I laugh to myself, because if I laugh in his face, he think I'm weak. You know, that's what my son probably would do. But then I would laugh to myself where it's just like, this is exactly what I would do. Like,
yeah,
you know, I would do this.
Just like, I get it, son. Yeah, I get it.
He has my blood in him. It's just the way that it goes.
It's like, hey, you took a shot, you got caught. Yeah. Let's deal with the consequences. Let's deal with the
consequences and let's talk it out, because you even talked to me about that. And it was good where it's like, I don't want my son to ever feel like he has to be scared of me. And that was one of the things that me growing up, my mom, I never was scared of my mom, but I respect my mom to a point where it did become scary sometimes.
Scared and
like,
disappointed.
Yeah, it's, and like that's why it goes all the way back to the beginning of what I was saying about the disappointment. Like hearing her say that, it affected me as a young child or as a young man. It affected me. So I don't want to do that with my son where it affects him to a point where now he's trying to figure out what's the next outlet. It's like I have to be able to talk to him, be able to understand him, but he's helping me grow as a man as well, because it's, I mean, we definitely going to talk about this, and this is something that's very important to me, is that I did not go see my dad's grave until I was, 33. First, like, I went to the graveyard site before when I was a kid, but I never really went back, because those are things that, that's in your life that you kind of close those doors.
At least scared to open them because you don't know what's behind them.
You just don't know. Yeah.
And, you don't want to open up Pandora's box when you're 33 years old and have to like deal with some old stuff.
100% correct. And I believe me going to Los Angeles to get my body checked, and something pulled me to my dad's site. And I knew where my dad's graveyard, like where he was buried at.
But you've never been there.
But I couldn't remember when the last time I've been there. And something that day was pulling me there. And I was having a tough relationship with Aiden, my oldest. I was having a tough relationship with him because I was snapping really quick to jump and not thinking, like we just was mentioning. And it's because I was just on the edge. I was on the edge. And you knew
you weren't right.
Yeah.
You knew something was off.
Something was off. And that's the worst thing to be as a parent, is be on edge when it comes to your child trying to give you something that's going to help you.
Because you know your words don't carry as much weight when you're on edge. You don't have that ability to just be there with them at that moment. Everything's got to be like, what are you going to do? How come you didn't do this? It's like,
yes.
This is anxiety that if you don't accomplish something or if you don't achieve something, even though you're only 5, 6, 7 years old, somehow that's going to reflect upon you failing, not being a good dad.
Yeah. And if it wasn't for that moment that something was pulling me to the graveyard site, I went, the graveyard is locked up because it's after hours. I jumped the gate.
You know, hey, you're 33, not 83. Yeah, you can jump that gate.
So I jumped the gate, and then it's been so many years. I didn't know exactly where it was at, but I had a good like thought of like, this is what's it's pulling me this way. You know, it pulled me to an area in this big old graveyard site. It pulled me to an area where, you know, you gotta remember, it's a graveyard. It's big. Yeah. It's huge. It pulled me to an area where I was like, I believe he's somewhere right here. And I started looking around, looking at names. And I'm like, these names ain't gonna match up. It ain't alphabetical order, whatever. You know, it's like, but then it was a tree that I seen. It's like, I think I remember seeing this tree as a kid. Go over to the tree, and then little did I know, a couple of tombstones over, his name is right there. And I'm like, oh shit. Like,
that was a weird moment.
Yeah. Like, okay. Yeah. And it's like, okay, I'm here. Okay. Now, you know, it's kind of dirty. You know, it's kind of like, it's not as clean. I'm like, okay. Like, you know, what's next? And it seemed like something just took over me of like, okay, start cleaning it up a little bit. And then I just broke down. I couldn't get the words. It just, it's one of those things that's like, you start like thinking, like you start thinking and like start thinking like, what if, you know, like the what ifs start to happen. And I needed that moment. I needed that moment because I was asking questions that I needed answers to. But when nobody's talking back to you, that shit hit deep. It hit deep, you know. And like, I sat there for probably like 45 minutes, just grieving, just crying. I couldn't figure out what to say because nobody is talking back to me, which is like something I'm not used to.
These are emotions you've never even had before.
Yeah, these are the things that's happening, and it's just like, what the fuck is wrong with me? You know, like then
it's like I'm here because that guy. But is the reason why I'm even alive.
But nobody is telling me. Yeah. He not able to talk to me. And then my brother called me. My brother called me randomly. He's like, oh, dude, shit, you crying? Where you at? Like, because like they didn't know I was in L.A. It was more a surprise. My brothers didn't know I was in L.A. And my oldest brother or son, he calls me. And he hear me like kind of crying. Where you at? I'm on my way. And I was like, I came to Daddy Gravesite. You know, I came. And I was like.
And he probably stopped right then.
I was like, you know, he stopped. And my brother, he said it. He just was like, Rob, you need that. Like, out of everybody in the family, you might be the only one that I didn't see grieve. You need that. And take your time. Like, if you got to be there all night, be there. Something that's making you do that. And all these emotions just, like, came in. And it came in all at, like, it came in at the right moment because I felt like my oldest, he was nine. And it's just, well, he was eight. Aiden was eight. And it's just... felt like I was starting to lose him a little bit with what we were saying earlier. I was so just like on edge. I couldn't understand things. I was trying to take in
him. You're just surviving as a dad. You weren't being successful exactly at that moment.
But me sitting there for about 45 minutes, I think it kind of opened up a door in me that was like in my brain that kind of told me like, you're okay. You're going to have these moments. And it was still just tough. It was just fucking tough. And like, I told myself every time I go to LA, I'm going to listen to what's pulling me because I feel in my heart that what pulled me there has helped me get a better relationship with Aiden, which my oldest, getting a better relationship with him. And now I'm learning how to operate my 3-year-old Adonis because I didn't went through it with Aiden being at that age because I had full custody of him when he was a year and a half. And me having full custody of Aiden, it kind of trained me to be a dad, but I never know what was right or wrong, like we was mentioning. I didn't know that, but that meeting at that graveyard site that day for me and my dad,
That was a level up.
It leveled me up to a point of like, what I'm doing is correct, but I have to be okay with failing because I'm not there to help you. Yeah. Like, he's not here. And it built that relationship like we was just talking about of like, I didn't have. It wasn't that I didn't have. It just happened to be that he's not there to physically show me, but he's happy with what I'm doing. Yeah. But it takes the time and the effort of, it's through my sons. It's through them. They're teaching me how to be a good dad. They're teaching me how to learn how to be a better individual because nobody's perfect. You
know? And I imagine that must have been a trip too because Aiden was about close to the same age range at that time than when you lost your dad. And for your brother to say, it probably tripped you out to think like your brother's like, yeah, man, you were the only one that didn't really deal with that because you're a little kid, you don't know what's going on. And so now fast forward, you're a 33-year-old man, you're now feeling those feelings, but at a perfect time because you look at your son, it's like, dude, if he lost me right now, like that wouldn't be fair to that kid.
And I believe that's all, that was pushing me to the point of like, you gotta do this, you gotta do that. And like, I start to see the disconnection of like my son. And then I was in a relationship at that time and it was just a lot of stress that was all around. But then Aiden do something small, I'm blowing it up because I'm quick. Like, okay, I got to, but that was in the back of my mind as well of like, I lost my dad when I was six. He got killed when I was six. And my mom had to step up and take care of all seven of us. She had to because it was nobody else was going to do it. And it's just like, 5 boys, 2 girls. My mom was the wife that stayed at home because my dad, and this is stories that I've heard, my dad is the one who's like, look, I'm going to go make sure everything is good. the 94 riots, that was the Watts riots, after the after Rodney King,
the Rodney King beating.
Yep, yeah, the Rodney King beating that happened in Los Angeles. That was right in my neighborhood. I have heard stories that, and this is my brothers as well as my mom, like my dad, yeah, he went out, he looted. You know, he looted, but he didn't loot just to loot. He went, got shoes for all of us. He went, got clothes for all of us. He did go get a TV, from what I heard. He went and got a TV.
He wasn't the only one.
Yeah, he went and got a TV.
I've seen all the videos. A lot of people getting TVs.
Yeah, like he went and got a TV or whatever. But my mom was like, during that time when that was happening, he was like, y'all stay safe. I'm going to bring everything I can to the house to make sure that we survive if something was more to happen in the Watts.
Because that was a scary time. People didn't know what was going to come of that.
Yeah, people didn't know that. And like his thing was just, it's happening. I got to make sure to take care of the kids. And my mom always said that's what he was, one thing that he did. He made sure that we was all taken care of. That includes me and the kids. So when he died, well, when he got killed, and it was a gruesome murder from, now I got older, my mom kind of explained it to me. He was shot 6 times, and you know that's another story of how that all happened. Like I found out just a couple of months ago, after finally asking my mom that question of what really happened. Like I know he was killed, but what happened? And she kind of broke it down. But her thing was like, when your dad was killed, I didn't know what the hell I was gonna do with y'all. She said, I knew how to grind, but I knew how to grind with my husband on my side. He the one that helped us get to where we was at. And when he left, when God told him it was time, it put so much pressure on me that alcohol abuse was something that kicked in. And not knowing the next check, not knowing the next meal. When I grew up, and what I mean by she will make sure to scrape by, and she explained it to me because I seen it at a young age of like Thanksgiving come around. We don't know where the hell we're going to get a turkey from. We don't know what we're going to eat. We don't even know what's going to, we don't know if we're even going to do anything.
And that we wasn't you and her. That was a lot of people.
That was, yeah, it was like, yeah, it's like all of us, but she's the person. She's the one that's over it. She make meals, figure out ways. She figure out ways where she would say it herself and she laughs about it. And it don't dawn on me until me being older and seeing it with my own kids is that she said, it's sometimes we won't even have a Christmas until Christmas Day. Or Thanksgiving to Thanksgiving Day. And she said, what I mean by that is that your father somehow up top, he figured things out. And I wind up with a turkey on Thanksgiving Day or Christmas, right on the day of Christmas.
Got the presents.
Yep, yep. She said on the day of Christmas, presents are made. And like somehow, some way, it been like that every single year that he was gone. And as y'all got older, I started saving up some of the money because it's like I don't have to pay as much because y'all older now. But she said it was always those moments of like your dad always figure out a way to send something that's gonna slow you down and make you see it. And the more I was thinking about it, and as I'm talking about it right now, that's the sign that I needed of why I got pulled to that grave. Because he was something.
Like, you needed this right now so you can do, because he was providing, he was taking care of you guys, which is, that's like square one as a father, right?
That's the prime goal.
And especially nowadays, it's back in the old days when it was a lot harder just to survive and just to get by, right? Now we have a lot more going for, especially all the hard work you've done with your athletic career, with business and stuff. You've now gotten to the point where providing for your kids, check, that box has been checked, right? Mm-hmm. Like you're taking care of your kids, providing for the kids. But now there's something else that's required. It's something that you can give them that I believe our parents, our ancestors before us, it's not that they didn't want to give that to us. They were just too busy trying to get by.
Yes.
They didn't have enough knowledge and understanding
to
understand how to like provide for something else, provide for a little bit more personal details. And, you know, I'm sitting here listening when you're talking and I'm like, man, like I want to think that, like, and I'm sure you want to think this, that your dad's looking down and in some way, shape or form, he's proud of you. But I also want to tell you that you learn way more from raising your kids than you will ever be learning from, 100%. Than you learn from being raised by your parents. Because you're running back life and watching your kids doing the same things you did. You're like, oh man, my kid's trying to get extra time on the video game when I told him he couldn't. Trying to sneak around. Right. Yeah. And then when you're seeing these things in real time, if you were to react to them, that would be a reaction out of anger, frustration, that they're doing something to disrespect you. But if you sit back and you watch what's happening, like, well, he is my son. That's the same type of stuff I do. Maybe this is a teaching opportunity instead of just you're a bad kid opportunity.
Yeah, see, and I'll give a quick example of my mom. So we grew up, like I said, we grew up poor and food stamps. And at that time, food stamps was paper stamps. You know, it was paper. It wasn't EBT.
You didn't get no ABT.
You know, the coupons.
Boom, that's stamps.
Yep, stamps. Yeah, you know. And I remember one time I turned 10. My mom gave me a $5 food stamp. And four and five ones, normal, like real dollars.
Yeah.
I was rich. I was rich. But something in me told me that I wanted to see what a $10 food stamp looked like. So I did sneak up inside her room and found a $10 food stamp. And I'm like, cool. Let me go spend it and see if I get back cash. I stole it. I took it. And my mom, I think she, when I took it, I went and cashed it, and instead of them giving me back food stamps, they gave me back cash. So I went, spent a dollar at that time, 25 cent on chips, you know, the 25 cent chip bag, that 25 cent Chasta soda pop, you know, bought that 25, that's 50 cent.
I like the orange Chasta.
Then I bought the 50 cent grandma cookies. You know, so I spent a dollar out of that $10 food stamp, went, spent that, they gave me back 9 ones. I went back, put the 9 ones in her, like right back where I got it. Now, I think my mom knew that somebody was fucking around. Somebody was in my room messing around.
Yeah.
Somebody did something. And I think she knew that I did it. And when I know that she knew that I did it, she didn't address it as in like spanking me, like, or discipline me, like grabbing the belt, which is something that was normal in my household, grabbing the belt. She put me to the side and talked to me about it. And she said, you know, you did something that was fucked up, but you did something that was beneficial, because I couldn't use the food stamps for something else. And you put some cash there. I was able to use the cash, but that was still fucked up. You don't do that. You know, you come talk to me about it. Now, my son, fast forward, being a parent, my son then went and took some quarters out of one of my little quarter machines. I kind of like put quarters up beside. He took it out. We go to the Smith's Market, and he like, I want to buy some candy. I'm like, you got candy money? And he's like, yeah. I'm like, oh, okay, whatever. And I started thinking, like,
where did you get that money from?
I'm like, where did you get that? He's like, oh, I just found it around the house. You found it around a house. I don't have money around a house like that. Well, I did. I found it around a house. The next day, I was like, let me just go to my quarters and see. And I like did the math on my quarters. Yeah. I'm missing quarters.
Yeah.
And I was going to snap. I was going to snap on them. Where it's just like, you're stealing from me. You don't. But then I had to think back to what my mom did to me. And I had to flip it. I had to flip it to make him understand that it's not right that you took it from your dad. It's not right. But you helped me, because then it made me recount the money, and now I know how much I have, but it still wasn't the right thing. But like you just said, you learn as a parent from your kids. My mom taught me a lot of things, and I learned a lot.
She planted the seed.
Yeah, but then the seed didn't grow until looking at Aiden, and he did the same shit that I did. And it just was like, bro, like, really? And I'm like, what the hell? Like, my dad got to be looking down and saying, you needed this one.
So this actually brings me up to something I wanted to do with you today on the podcast. A little segment. This is a OG word association. So what I mean by that is, I don't know if you've ever heard of word association games, but someone will say a word and then you just say the first thing you think of when they say that word.
Okay.
I've been doing this for a long time in different scenarios, just a little thought experiment type of thing, but also it's a good way to get just like heartfelt stuff out of someone just with one word, right? Okay. So.
Is it a right or wrong answer?
No. So right when I say the word, I would just want you to say the very first thing that comes to your mind.
Okay,
cool. It could be like basically like one word or one sentence back, and then you can talk about it for a little bit after that. But I just want to, what's the first thing? The first thing you think right when you hear this?
Okay.
Ready?
Yep.
Watts.
Home. Like it's home. And what I mean by home, that taught me a lot. It taught me a lot. Like, Watts is part of South Central, and most people that grew up in Watts, it's a small percentage that get out. And it was my home, and that was, it's not it was, it still is. I love being part of Watts and knowing that that's my hood. And it helped me grow as an individual, because you see the rights and the wrongs. I definitely start identifying friends and associates. Because I grew up in Watts, I started to understand like some of my friends is the ones that's going to help me get to where I need to go. They're going to push me. They support me. You know, they happy for me to do something different that's positive.
But Watts also showed you the people trying to take advantage of you and use you.
The people that's associates. Yeah. The ones that's like, they're there and they like you, but they don't want you to do better than them. If you're doing better than them, it's something wrong. Like, you're bougie. You're different. You don't belong here. You're not part of this hood. That's why Watts was something that was big for me, because it helped me identify friends and associates. And like, God blessed me with bringing Coach Kalani Sitake to the inner city, to the hood, and showing me he was my friend first. And him being a friend, he motivated me to be so much better. So Watts is always going to be my home, and it's going to always be something that I'm pride for. But I'm also proud for all the different experiences that it gave me, whether it was negative or positive. Because I done got shot at before. I done got a gun pulled out on me. But something about that hood that I would never, ever be like, I don't know. I still go back.
Well, I'm going to take a guess that you're very happy that you've been successful enough and worked hard enough that you don't have to raise your kids in the same situation that you're raised in. But it also seems like it means a lot for you to make sure that you make sure Watts is part of their life experience.
Yes.
Growing up, not just taking them there, but the lessons that you learn from there, make sure they get the lessons without having to live in the midst of the drama.
Every summer, Aiden goes back and goes stay with my brother every summer. And then my brother take him to the park that I grew up and I play football at, as well as my brothers play football at. And they're there. They're in there. And like, funny, when my son, I call him one summer, just last summer, and quick story, he's like, oh yeah, Dad, you know, there's a whole lot of black people here. I'm like, well, you're back in LA. He said, yeah, I'm just saying that. And then one of my good friends that's still in the area calls me up randomly. Hey, I see this kid and he looked like your kid. Is this Aiden? And I'm like, what park you at? He's like, I'm at Ted Watkins, which is the park that we grew up at, Real Rogers, but they changed it to Ted Watkins. And I'm like, yeah, that's my son. He said, oh, well, I know now. And he said, hey, come here. And he's like, hey, I'm your uncle. Like, whatever you need, come talk to him. And I just was like, see, that's the type of respect that
made you feel good.
Made me feel good that I know that in Watts, my son, my friends, we know each other so well. And we always been at that park, that some of them are still there, that they see Aiden that don't even know the difference other than this kid looked like somebody. And it's like, this is your kid. I'm going to make sure he's taken care of. I got you, Rob.
That's what I miss about having a small community.
Yeah.
That's what I miss about everybody know each other in the neighborhood. Because if you're going to pop off to someone, you better be real careful, because you can see him later on that same day. This ain't online type of drama.
Yes, yes.
Okay, I got another word for you. Mm-hmm. Okay. Family.
My immediate family. Like, my family is my brothers, my sister, and my mom. That's my immediate family. And then my nieces and nephews, they all come in handy. But
what's the first thing you think of when you think of your family?
When I think of family, I think of together. Like, tough times. Tough times. And my mom has always said, we can have nothing. As long as we're together, we're good. And she always felt like no matter how this world will happen or how it sees us or how things go, if it's at least two or more of y'all together, you're very strong. And seven of us. So, you know, like this Thanksgiving is going to be my first Thanksgiving with my family, with my immediate family, well, my brothers, my sisters, and my mom. We haven't had a Thanksgiving together since about before I came to Utah. So I left LA 2006. I didn't have a together Thanksgiving until probably I was in the ninth grade. So that's probably 2002. Yeah. It's been that long. And from 2002 to going all the way back to when I was born, every holiday, my mom made sure we was together. Every holiday. Because it was so important to be together.
Like, we made it. Like, yes, we got out of that situation that passed.
Her thing was just, we going to be, that's the most important, is together. It has to be two or more. If it's two or more, the most powerful person in the world, you Johnsons. Yeah. You know, this is what happened. You're Baileys. Just, you're two or more. And this, I'm excited about this because I'm taking Aiden, I'm taking Adonis, and like, you know, we about to break bread.
Yeah.
We're about to really like do it the way that the old times.
They're going to get to hear all the stories, the yeah. uncles, the aunties, yeah. everything. Those are the best times. I remember as a kid watching all the older people just at the barbecues, big family. Those are my favorite times because you get to like listen to their experiences because, you know, they just see you as their dad. Yeah. They're going to get to hear lots of stories about you as being a punk kid too.
Yeah, right. And then it just runs deeper. It runs really deep because when you're having all these family get-togethers and some families and, you know, they have family reunions and mm-hmm. things like that. My family, we don't have family reunions because it gets tough when you bring uncles and you bring cousins into the mix because my family household, alcohol is one of the biggest things that kind of plays a big factor in the get-togethers. And sometimes the alcohol can bring out the worst in some people.
And then it can ruin the whole entire point you're together.
It ruins the good moment of us being together and turn into some like wolves almost of like, but you did this. And I'm, you know, this, that. So this is going to be a really good experience because it's my brothers.
Just the tight part of the family.
My sisters. And it's just us.
That's great.
Together. That's what I think about family is together. Two or more, you good. Powerful.
I love it. Thank you. Yeah, making those memories with your boys too.
Yeah.
Okay, I got one more for you. I don't know why I picked this one, but after this conversation, I think I picked a good one. Aiden.
He's the prince. Like I explained to Aiden a lot. Like you know, like when I'm not on this world, you know, I'm not on this planet, you know, I kinda tell him like everything that I have tried to install into you, I'm really hoping that you pull it to your brother. Like I'm really hoping, you know, because you know, God has a number. Like I tell Aiden all the time, God has a number. And, you know, it's going to happen. No matter how much I try to avoid it, it's a number.
We're all the time.
Yeah, it's
we're
a number. Date. It's a number. And Aiden, it's your job. It's your main job to push everything that I have tried to show you. You need to do the same things. Like, sorry, I'm like, get emotional about it because I talked to him a lot about this. And
you want him to finish like, what you started.
It's not even really finished what I started. I really want him to represent me and the family, like his uncles and his grandma and his grandpa. You know, you gotta hold it down. You gotta.
It's like, why did you go through all that to not give him those blessings and those gifts and take care of the family?
Yeah, and a quick story that me and him had. I let him go to Vegas with my mom for a couple of weeks, and I went and picked him up, and I'm driving. We're driving back, and I guess my mom kind of talked to him a little bit about my dad. She must have said something, and something stuck with Aiden. And at this time, my mom never really talked to me about my dad as much because of everything that happened. But we're driving back from Vegas, and Aiden, I got the sunroof open, and we're driving, and he just randomly, and this when he was younger, he just randomly was like, "Hey, Dad, like, you know, where's your daddy?" And it was just
you're like, "What?"
Yeah, like I was like, huh? And he said, "Where's your dad?" I'm like, "Well, you know, Grandpa, he had to go, you know." And at that time, nobody ever asked me that when at that time because I don't talk about it. And this was before I went to the graveyard site at 33. This was around 30, I think. And me and Aiden just kind of going back, and I was like, "Oh, he just kind of went away for a little bit." And Aiden was like, "So he got to be up there in the clouds, kind of looking down, which means that he's gonna help you help me, you know." And I was just like, it's like, dude, like, how do you know this? And he's just like, "Well, I'm just saying, Dad, like, you know, like the clouds, they move, right? And the clouds, they got to do something with you to kind of help me." So when I hear Aiden, I think about that story, and I think about as the years has progressed that Aiden has done my son has done some amazing things with me. He done some amazing things because I taught him. He done some amazing things.
But he's taught you a lot of things by just being alive and being in your life.
Yes, he has. So when I hear Aiden, it's like I'm really hoping and praying that no matter what happens with me, when I'm off, when it's time to go, I'm hoping that he pulls in everything I taught him and get his brother in line, because that at the end of the day, I love my sons. And Adonis is the most amazing kid ever, my youngest. But at the end of the day, big brother is going to help you. He's going to get you to where you need to be. Just like in my situation, my three big brothers helped me get to me where I need to be. my brother Sonny, my brother Wayne, and my brother EJ, Elijah. They helped me develop this character that I am. So it's here, Aiden. It's like the prince. I gotta hope that he become the king, but prince is like the Lion King, like the movie. It's really, I thought about that a lot, like that movie.
That father older son relationship.
That
we've talked about. My listeners know because I've done lots of episodes on it. It really is a very interesting relationship because no father wants his son to be just like him. You want him to be better.
Yeah.
Because he can be. The potential of being better than you, if you do your job right, you're going to upload all the great data for him. Give him all the things he needs to know so he can take it to a whole nother level.
Yeah, and like that Lion King scene of just like Simba is waking up the dad. Dad, get up. You're going to show up. Every time that I think about that, I think about Aiden because I'm like, that's kind of how it is in life is that I have to be able to get up. But for him.
He's not going to let you rest.
No, he's not. But it's just like I have to get up and show him everything that I learned from my brothers and my sisters and my mom. And I got to install it into him. And it's like, you got to be able to push what I did even better to your brother. So he's the prince.
I love him. I love him, man. Well, I'll tell you what, I think we hit a good sweet spot there. I just want to thank you again for coming on the podcast.
Thank you, though.
And I'm really excited to be working with you in the future. You know, we'll be letting people know some things we got going on in the future with this whole entire OG therapy thing. I just, from day one, for those of you who don't know, because I don't think we mentioned it, so most people, in fact, no one would know, he came and visited my Quit Tripping support groups long time ago.
Yeah.
And you know, I think it's safe to say that some former players at the University of Utah, there's a good fraternity. You know, we try to help each other out as much as we could, but it really meant a lot to me that you would drop what you were doing in your busy life and come just to hang out with a bunch of teenagers, and it really meant a lot to me. So I want to thank you for that. I want to thank you for this. I want to thank you for all the great work you're doing with youth, and I'm also excited to be working with you with some OG therapy stuff 100%. In the future, and this guy's got the juice. He's got the skills, and you're nice. At that place now where I want you to be able to really do what you're really meant to do on this earth. Yeah, you're an entertainer in football. You're an athlete. You did all those things. You're charismatic. Everybody loves you, but something about the way you talk to the kids, something about the way you share information with them, not only makes you an OG, but it makes you a dude that people want. It's like you're the guy that people don't want to disappoint. Kind of like your mom. It's like you're not trying to flex on people, trying to say, you better do what I told you, cut or else. It's almost like if the kids disappoint you, my son, by the way, I told him I was doing a podcast. Rojo's like, you're doing a podcast with Rojo? Let's tell Rojo. I said, what's up? It's just something about you that people are like, I want to make you happy. Like you brought out the best of my son. You brought out the best of all those kids there. And so thank you again for being on the podcast. And got some things coming up in the future with OG Therapy. And you're going to be bringing your best to a lot of young people, but also people in the business world and also other fathers just trying to do what you've already done and what you've already gone through.
Well, I mean, I appreciate being here. I mean, if it wasn't for our boy Brandon Cash, you know, if it wasn't for Cash, that kind of, we got connected like through just video gaming. We got connected and it just kind of, the friendship kind of went off to a higher level. And Brandon Cash, he the one that's like, I got a friend that I know that you'd be good with. And then we went to dinner. Me and him went to dinner first. Me and Brandon, came to the house for a birthday party. I think it was a birthday party for you. Okay. And we're a birthday party for Brandon Cash. And I met his mom and the family and everybody. And it was like, you know, let's do this. Then he introduced me to you. And it was just like, you know, those vibes, those vibes and that wave, it's like, you know, genuine people. So. Yeah. I'm just big and feel blessed to be part of this because it ain't such things that's going to pop. This is going to be good for all of us.
Thank you, man. Heck, I did. I'm going to shut up. Let's end it like that. I can't top that. As well said. Well, I will be seeing you very soon.
Oh, heck yeah.
And until next time, well, we'll have you back on the podcast again, but next time.
I'll rip it up.
Yeah. Until next time, be cool. And as always, guys, thank you for helping us to light the fight.
We When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.